It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Alrighty then, we are up and running and ready to roll. Let's see if, we're rolling. I'm just waiting to see if I can actually get into the chat room. It's a little weird that way sometimes, but good things. Brother Deacon Asa lets me know that we are running hot and true on both streaming platforms, both at whiterosesociety.org. and headon.live. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you very much indeed. All right, daggummit. Let's see here. Okay, we'll just do this. Trying to get into the chat room. Like I said, it's a little frustrating when it doesn't happen. All right, daggummit. And okay, so that's good. We had a moment of, there I am, I think. I am. So if you, too, would like to be a member of the chat room conversation, run on over to headon.live and click on chat room and pick yourself out a screen name and a password. When you do, you will instantaneously appear in the magnificent, relatively new Horn chat room that works just fine without Java and is negotiable to people with, you know, Windows machines and Mac machines and what have you, and even people who can manage Linux. It all works there. And you'll be greeted by the likes of, and welcomed by the likes of Anatole and Silent R. Lamar and Malin and Squeaky and Thomas and V.T. Blom. Yes, indeed. As well as being moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, although a spacing guild master, has chosen this evening not to fold space and become man cave. You'll also be moderated by midweek pinch hit utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Yay. I think we're going to have a fantastic Titanic Tuesday. Yes. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. We have thanks to send out, as we do at the beginning of every program. Thank you very kindly to the two subscribers we have for the 10th day of the month. And those two subscribers are Don. Thank you, Don. And thanks very much goes out to Judy in New York. Thank you very kindly, Judy. So that's two subscribers for the 10th day of the month. Where does that leave us with regard to fundraising? Well, July is proving to be a bit tough. We're 10 days in and $680 behind. So that would be 10 people at $68 or 68 brand new subscribers for the 10th day of the month at $10 a piece. 68 people who decided that they could do without something around 46, 47, 48% of a McDonald's hamburger every day in order to keep independent, progressive, live conversation broadcasting on the air. Okay, if you want to be part of that, just go to headon.live, click on the PayPal icon there, and just follow your way through it. If you want to become a subscriber and, say, the 10th of the month, have your partial sponsorship of the program alongside that of Judy and Don, well, just click that little box that says make this happen every month. And then you set it and you forget it. And you just wander away, and it's just that simple. Let's see here. Other thanks to let's see. We have other thanks to send out, and that would be to our merry band of Patreon subscribers. And so, let's see. Just trying to log in there and well, that's just beautiful. It'll just take a second here. Okay, now, there we go. Thanks going out to our Patreon subscribers. Namely, to Terrace in California. Thank you, Terrace. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you to our buddy in the chat room, VT Blum. Thank you to Nick. Thank you to our buddy Horst. Thank you very kindly to Jeremy in Vermont. Thank you to Stephen. Thank you very kindly, Stephen, there in Wisconsin. Thank you to Barbara in Philly. Thanks to Ron in Delaware. Thank you to Barb in Minnesota. Thanks very kindly to Karen there in California. Thank you, Karen. Thank you to Kimberly in North Carolina. Thank you, Carl, in Texas. Thank you to Brother Usher Steve there in the Bronx. Thank you to Alec in Oregon. And thank you to our buddy the Nubian in California. Thank you to our buddy Fab, creator of the Fab Machine, that keeps the program on the air. Thank you. Thank you, Fab. Thank you to Matthew. Thank you to Rocky and Brendan. Thank you to Rico and Jim. Thank you to David. Thanks to Irwin. And thanks to Greg and Marty. And thank you very kindly to Robin in Ohio. And thank you to our buddy Olds. Thank you very much indeed, one and all. Those are our Patreon subscribers. Whether you prefer PayPal or Patreon, it's there for you. Heck, we're even hooked up to do Venmo. We have one person who likes Venmo. So that's there, too. If you wanted to use Venmo, give me a holler, and I'll tell you how. I'm told by Glenn that it's a beautiful day in the Rochester area. Thank you very kindly, Glenn. And that takes us. Okay, so that takes us back down to. We'll round up. Okay, that takes it. Oh, let's see. 668 bucks to go for fundraising on the evening. So it is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. And after last night's announcement of the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh, we've got plenty of Titanic wisdom to report this evening. And let's see, I thought a little bit of sometimes one's professional broadcast tongue gets wrapped around the vestiges of one's professional broadcast tonsils. I thought it might be good to have a little bit of follow-up from last night's Moran Monday edition, Cranky Old Maggots Behaving Badly. The woman who was berated by the hateful old white dude for wearing a shirt with Puerto Rico on it, because, you need to be wearing an American flag. Well, there's some more details out now. Lovely young woman by the name of Mia Irizarry. She's a veterinary tech in the Chicago area, and it turned out that they had rented the shelter, reserved it, what have you, for her birthday back in June. And at first, the cranky old maggot thought that asked her, "Well, is your shirt for Texas?" And although we only had a few minutes of the exchange there, it was actually the entire transaction was about a half hour long, a little over a half hour. And yeah, the cranky old maggot finally did get arrested, as well as his buddy. Irizarry asked the police officer why he ignored her and allowed her to continuously put her in fear of receiving an unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature for, you know, a half an hour. And the cop replied, "Well, he's a regular and doesn't have a violent history." Sorry, my Chicago accent's terrible. And the fact of the matter is, well, now at least, after the video went viral, and this is why people have to be ready to record this kind of thing. It is reported that the police officer who ignored the repeated cases of assault against her, that's what assault is after all, being put in immediate reasonable fear of receiving an unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature. Well, the guy is apparently on desk duty and under investigation for just sort of standing around while the cranky old white dude repeatedly committed a criminal misdemeanor act against this young woman. And what's particularly interesting is that in the interview that she gave to Latino Rebels, that's a website, LatinoRebels.com, she said something fairly important. When we watch these types of videos, we always say that we would react differently or we say how we would handle the situation. But in that moment, after calling for help, I realized that if I reacted aggressively, I would have been criminalized. It's definitely made me more cautious, she continued. But now I get to empathize with a new group of people. That sounds like, what's the term from several years back? It sounds very much like she's a wise Latina. And that's a good thing. Because, well, that certainly beats the daylights out of being a cranky old maggot. And also catching up on the issue of the ongoing conspiracy to commit kidnapping and crimes against humanity of the Trump regime. I'm sorry, that's just what it is. It sounds like some kind of strong language, but that's what it is. It's a conspiracy and the overt act that follows the conspiracy. Well, the Vice President of the United States, who is afraid of his boss, because according to the Vice President's brother, his boss reminds him of their stern old daddy there in Talibandiana. The Vice President of the United States, Mike Pencilneck Geek, in an interview with Dana Bash of CNN, well, he said, gosh darn it, there's a plan to reunite the families with their kidnapped children, sure.
If you are going to separate families, isn't it your responsibility as the leader of the government, isn't it the administration's responsibility to figure out how to get them back together?
Time out. Just a little pro tip to Dana Bash. If you're going to separate families, no. That question begins, what the hell is wrong with you that you're separating families? It's not done. It's ridiculous. It's vicious. It's cruel. What kind of sick, evangelical Christian are you, Mr. Vice President? But of course, we can't give them a sad because, after all, they want to pretend that they can just say and do as they please and then quietly go and eat their dinners and whatnot and not be pestered by we of the hoi polloi. Who remind them of the evil deeds that they do under the shining sun.
Like I said, it's Titanic Tuesday, and we do celebrate Titanic intellect, and I would advise you to get the hockey puck and the duct tape out, because there's some right on the way. You know, we've been celebrating Titanic Tuesday for years and years and years now, all ever since that one day that our buddy Jim tuned into a local White Wing radio and heard the morning monotone take a call from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers who said, Steve, how come you reckon it is that there are seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? Doesn't see them down in the mines. There's all kinds of ferns and seashells and shit. We ain't knows where's near the beach. To which the morning monotone replied, well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Still no word on the movement of the Titanic bacon fryer, microwave bacon fryer, but it's a big table, and the things move around on the, amongst the Titanic plates. So we're ready, right? Here comes the answer. Shouldn't you have a plan to reunite families that you were planning since, what did we figure out last night? August, July, June 2017 to separate the kidnappings you were planning to commit since almost a year ago? Shouldn't you have a plan, Mr. Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek?
Yes, and we've been working very diligently in that regard. I think 102 children that were separated from adults. Of that number, as of today's deadline, I believe we will have reunited 54 of those children.
But 54 out of 102,
And 102 out of more than 2,000. It's the more than 2,000 part. That's where the math breaks down for good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian, Vice President Mike Pencilneck geek. That's where it all breaks down.
Oh, by God, Bob, if they don't want to get separated from their children, then they ought not be coming to America, where we love children, just not them's. And you know, these just lawbreakers is what they are. They're just breaking America's laws, trying to come here and join up their children with the MS-13.
One of these days, it's going to be really funny when some maggot gets pulled over for speeding, which is also a misdemeanor, and is immediately separated from their children, and they'll have no idea where the children are. They've been put in the custody of some giant-ass corporation that's getting $69 million to warehouse kidnapped kids. Because that's what we're talking about here. We
separate families from children all the time when they're criminals.
Not for misdemeanors, we don't. And that's,
well, maybe we need to work on turning that into the felony, trying to bring your children here to bring to join up with the MS-13.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. So, and by the way, they're working on it now, you'll notice, in the present tense. But funny, back in August or whatever of 2017, when they were letting the contracts, they did no planning whatsoever to figure out, let's give them each a matching wrist bracelet or something with a little number on it, so that they can be, no, hell no. Yeah, right.
Under the age of 5, you have children, I have a child, are not with their parents. Yeah. Is that acceptable?
Well, it's not necessarily the case.
But should even one child under the age of 5?
Well, what we don't ever want to do is return a vulnerable child, age 3, age 4, to someone who may be a threat to them, who may...
You mean like their mother? When there's no evidence that they were... Is there some level of evidence that the 2,000 children were under threat from their parents who loved them enough to bring them from places like El Salvador so that they wouldn't get all dead in the streets in front of their homes? That kind of daint? What? You dirty little liar.
Be a human trafficker who is not their parent. And frankly, the number has winnowed down from 102 to somewhere in the 70s.
Oh, good, there's winnowing.
Our vetting process. We've actually... in this process, found that people who represented themselves as parents turned out not to be the parents. We found out that there were individuals with...
Data, Mike? Proof? Evidence? No? Of course not, liar.
With strong criminal backgrounds that had children with them as they crossed the border.
What the hell is a strong criminal background? And how do you differentiate that between a weak criminal background? Is no criminal background a weak criminal background as opposed to a strong criminal background? Hell, is a strong criminal background the fact that they were just now charged with a misdemeanor for trying to enter the United States illegally?
But Ron Johnson, the chairman of the Homeland Security Committee in the Senate, a fellow Republican.
And intellect like a steel trap, Ron Johnson, yes. Even he.
He is very upset at your administration. He said, if they've got a process, they're not revealing it to me. These are human beings.
Well, I spoke to Senator Johnson today, and we're going to continue to work with members of Congress
in
both parties. Of course there's a plan. Look, we've got a crisis at our southern border.
A crisis entirely of their own making. Yeah, there's a plan. And next thing you know, suddenly we're back in 1968 again, and the Wayback Machine has been fired up, and there's a plan, and it's a good plan, and it's a strong plan, it's a real planny plan but it's a secret. Oh, that's right. I will get us out of the Vietnam War. I have a secret plan, and I won't tell you unless you elect me president. Okay, you're president, Mr. Nixon. What's the plan? It's still a secret. You have to re-elect me to a second term before I tell you the plan. All right, here's your second term. What's your plan? Oh, fuck it. We're just gonna leave. Push helicopters into the ocean, shit like that. It's the best we've got. Mm-hmm. Great days in Merca. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Jim notes, Lord knows, I wish we were back in those days when Titanic Tuesday was created. Yes, back when we were innocently stumbling and shambling through the reign of error, thinking that George W. Bush was the worst thing that could possibly ever happen to the presidency, the most know-nothing, ignorant human being that the Republicans could ever find to nominate for the presidency. Oh, backward, turn backward, O time in thy flight. Make me a child again, just for one night. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But no, we're here. We're stuck here. And speaking of Ron Johnson, a little bit of follow-up from the trip that those highly patriotic Republicans took to Moscow for the 4th of July. Well, they it's kind of weird. People like Senator Thune and Senator Shelby sounded like they were working from a script, saying the very same thing that, you know, we're not adversaries with Russia, we're competitors. When in fact Russia's economy is so puny and weak that they really aren't competitors, and yes, they are adversaries. But here's the problem. Ron Johnson came back from the 9-day jaunt to lovely Moscow in the sun. And he gave an interview wherein he said, Russia meddling in our elections is, quote, this is a quote, y'all, not the greatest threat to our democracy. He went on to say that Merkins have, quote, blown it way out of proportion. Then he said that maybe the sanctions against Russia that are presently in place, maybe they ought not be. Quote, you'd be hard-pressed to say that sanctions against Russia are really working all that well. And on the other hand, there's Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana, who, again, as mentioned last night, said that he got right testy with that smart-ass foreign minister there. Stop screwing with American elections, he says he told them. Wise ass and a bully. Talking to the Daily Beast, Kennedy said, the Russian leadership that we met with talked about the sanctions and how they were making no difference, but then they kept talking about the sanctions. So the left hand, well, no, the right hand really doesn't know what the other right hand is doing. And that, of course, is the purpose of Titanic Tuesday, to point out the Titanic intellect of the white wing in this country. Note coming in from Steve in New York. Let's make something very clear, Steve says. There is zero, nothing, nada, never, kind, now reason to separate a child from his mother's breast except for the single, sole, solitary reason that when a parent threatens the child's life. The crisis at the southern border, to use Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek's terms, the crisis at the southern border is their decision to kidnap children from their parents and place them in concentration camps. Plain and simple. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very much. Terrace with a note says, subject line, Gabby Johnson. As I heard the Puerto Rico shirt story on yesterday's program, I wondered how many police officers in the U.S. are white supremacists. Probably more than you would care to realize, Terrace. I wondered how many... It seems like a high percentage, especially given how many of them shoot brown people. Like everyone else, I know police officers. I know people whose family members are police officers. Obviously, they're not all white supremacists. Not all cops. But Nazis are everywhere. German Nazis, after all, admired the U.S.'s Native American Holocaust. Our ancestors are the original Nazis without the flashy costumes. German Nazi rocket scientists were given jobs in the U.S. military after World War II. No questions asked. And a lot of them taught their children to hate on the down low. Until now. Now, the hate is out. It's out indeed. Meanwhile, they're in, as proof thereof, they're in Louisville, Kentucky. Another cranky old maggot. I'm making the presumption of the maggot, but just can't see a whole lot of Hillary voters doing this. WDRB.com, WDRB TV, reporting on an attack in what it refers to as a feud between the modern-day Hatfields and McCoys. 40 911 calls during 4 years have taken place in Bullitt County, Kentucky. Thomas McMullen made the call, the most recent one. He's got scarring from his chest to his neck after a dispute this past Sunday with his cranky old next door neighbor. That's because his cranky old next door neighbor attacked him with a weed eater. Mm-hmm. A 67-year-old Larry Haynes was weed eaten out in his yard. And with the camera rolling, turns the weed whacker toward the camera. That's when Mr. McMullen says, "Call the police, he just attacked me with a fucking weed eater." He said, "I was shocked at that moment, like this guy really just swung a weed eater at me. I could feel the blood start running down me and feel the burn. And I was like, did this really just happen?" 67-year-old Haynes has been charged with second-degree assault. Bullitt County Chief Deputy Mike Cook said, "Neighbor disputes are one of the most common calls we deal with." It was... It was almost exactly 2 years ago when, in another manifestation of the ongoing hostilities between McMullen and Haynes, with Haynes being apparently the perpetuator of it. It was back in July 2016, around Independence Day, when Haynes screamed at the McMullens as they filmed him, "Your wife sucks nigger dick." And, among other things, he pulled a gun with eight kids, as eight kids were in the McMullen yard. She said, "I had it all on video, and they did nothing. It was dismissed. Each time they call and they press charges, my grandpa's been found innocent," says Haynes' grandson, James. Grandson James says, "My grandpa got startled, and as a natural reaction, he lifted up the weed eater." Mm-hmm. And apparently, even before the McMullens moved in, Haynes had problems with the people who lived in the house before them. Bullitt County E911 Center Major Danny Thompson said, "We like to call the guys like this a frequent flyer. We know how to get there. And every time, the charges have always been dismissed against Larry Haynes. But in this instance, well, it's going to be hard to ignore what with actual physical evidence of slashes across the chest of Mr. McMullen. Who, by the way, let me just point out, is a white guy. Because see, that's your big insult among your racists, is an allegation that a white female would have sexual relations with a person of color. Oh, Jesus. There have been efforts to get people to... Now, see, that's one of those where you call 911 and you should probably be calling 911. But it's proving rather difficult, even though there's a bit of a campaign out there to get aggrieved white folks to quit calling 911 just because they're... pissed off, as opposed to being in danger or a crime being committed. It's apparently proving difficult to get them to take that to heart, which sort of brings me to another something, and it might. Might provide for a bit of a giggle. At least I hope so. Because there's help out there now for cranky white folks. Who feel an urge to call 911 at the drop of a hat. Let's check in. Just a minute. There we go. Here now.
"Hi, fellow white people. Are you having a sad because that family's enjoying a picnic in the park while being black? Did that customer in front of you just speak a language that makes you irrationally angry? Well, this is a great time to try. Mind your own f***ing business. With mind your own f***ing business, you'll be able to grow the f*** up and act like a decent f***ing human being. Our patented technology allows you to pull your head out of your ass and see the world beyond the brim of your MAGA hat."
"Hi, honey. I saw some black people at the Starbucks today."
"Did you mind your own f***ing business?"
"I sure f***ing did."
"Stop bothering those nice people today. With mind your own f***ing business.
Side effects may include not harassing people, no one getting arrested or murdered by police, a general sense of well-being for people of color, a lack of internet fame and or trolling and coexistence. Please consult your doctor if you are still a piece of after minding your own f***ing business, as the symptoms may be a result of a deeper problem and require further treatment.
Now available at Anthropology and Whole Foods.
That courtesy of Now This Politics. Well, apparently it's not being distributed widely enough. We need to go to Ohio for this one. It was there where a young fella got himself, and you know, this just kind of has Americana written all over it. 12-year-old young man wanted to have a little spending money in his pocket, took the initiative, and got himself something that little white boys all over America used to do. Got himself a paper route. And on his very first day, he set out to deliver his papers when they were pulled, he and his mom were pulled over by police. Police officer pulls up and asks us questions as if we were intruding in their area. Totally disgusted and disturbed that this kind of behavior still exists. That's right. Some terrified somebody, dropped the dime on a 12-year-old boy wearing shorts and a dare. An anti-using drugs kind of program, DARE. He's all proud of himself, pictures of him holding up his first newspaper. I don't have to tell you, the kid's black. Got a happy smile on his face. Yeah, that was before the cops showed up, of course. Some terrified person in some little neighborhood was put in fear by the presence. You know, they all look the same, 12 years old, 22 years old, newspaper, submachine gun, paper boy, Black Panther. How are you supposed to be able to tell? Officer Brian McKeon, a spokesperson for the police department in question, said, racial bias had nothing to do with it. As reported by NBC4 WCMH TV in Columbus, Upper Arlington, Ohio. There was no racial bias involved. No, of course not. Cop pulls up and says, and they're delivering these ad circulars, house to house, door to door. Cop pulls them. What are you doing here? Are you soliciting? Mama said, I said, no, sir, I'm not soliciting. I'm delivering papers. What papers? The young man showed him the paper. Oh, really? All right. Then he sat there in his cruiser for a little bit longer and then drove away. Mm-hmm. Police Department spokesman Brian McKeon there in Upper Arlington or whatever the fuck said a resident had called and reported seeing somebody going up to a porch empty-handed and leaving the porch with something in their hand. And the officer went on to say, anytime we get a call like that, obviously we're going to respond. We're going to make sure that nothing criminal was going on. If we think someone is taking things from porches, well, we'd want our police force to follow up on that to make sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what it turned out is that since it was the first day, they had misdelivered some of the little ad packages, and they went to retrieve them to get it right. Mama said, I could see if we did something wrong, loud music or whatever. Well, yeah, I mean, loud music in America is reason enough for terrified white people to blow young black people to hell away. Mama continued, said, we did nothing wrong. Why are you talking to us like we did something, like we were throwing bombs or throwing toilet paper on somebody's trees or something? We did nothing wrong. Meanwhile, Officer McKeon says, if she feels she was treated unfairly by our officer, we want to hear from her. We want to know what our officer did to make her feel that way so we can investigate that and we can find out. Well, why didn't she just maybe hire a lawyer and let the lawyer explain it to you in a complaint? You can get, you know, once the complaint's filed, you get a free copy. Because a resident was nervous. You never know. You never know with them. You don't know when they're just doing... I mean, how are you supposed to know? Yeah, I know. I know. Ron in Raleigh with a note. Subject line, these SOBs. Have you noticed these SOBs will say anything with zero attribution to push their narrative? Shit like whole towns being liberated. This goes back to Vice President Mike Pencil Neck Geek and his, we got a plan, and definitely got a plan. Got a good Jesus plan is what we got. It's a plan in Jesus' name for the little children that we kidnapped. Yeah. But Ron says, shit like whole towns being liberated or no-go zones or people with criminal records showing up at the border with random children. Fuck me. They can do this because their base will believe anything. I'm sure you've heard that the Oompa Loompa in chief has pardoned two of the Bundy Bunch. Yeah, I noticed that earlier today. Do you think Cloven Bundy has paid one penny of his back grazing fees? And do you think he's still grazing his cattle on federal land? Yes, and no, and yes. By the way, now that there's a Ron in Delaware, can we now have a charter for a fraternity of Rons? I'll have to look into that. It's an alternative spelling, but we've got at least three. We got at least three Rons. I'd say we'll to use fraternity terms, we will consider the Rons to be in colony status. Yes, we've started a new fraternity colony. Yes, we've colonized the Rons. Bad term, that, colony, but that's how it works out. I mean, that's how they do, you know, when you put a new chapter up at a new college, it's a colony until it gets the full initiatory rights and has to ride the goat and stuff. Mm-hmm. Alexander wants to know where to find that mind your own fucking business ad. It's at Now This Politics, Alexander. Now This Politics. I think you should be able to find it that way. Yeah, mind your own business. Now This Politics should turn it right up. Well, okay, we're going to have problems with the new fraternity colony. Ron, who is not in the far frozen north, but is instead whiling away some time down here amongst the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cold Trump, Virginia, Stan. Ron says, I don't want to be in any fraternity that would have me. That, of course, is the old Groucho Marx position. Charlie in Tennessee, meanwhile, asks the question, going back to the young woman who was harangued for her clothing. What's the difference between someone wearing a shirt with the word Florida on it and the words Puerto Rico on it? The drunk who upset the family gathering was wrong, and what you're saying about Bullitt is probably true. He used to live in Bullitt County, Kentucky, Charlie tells us. If you really want to hack off a if you really want to hack off a dispensational premillennialist, ask him to show you in the Bible where interracial marriage is against Christianity. It ain't there. Well, considering the fact that your books of the Bible were largely written by brown people, yes, even St. Paul, and much of the Mediterranean is brownish was at the time. Right. Exactly. Point taken. And there's no difference. I mean, it's like, I had I got together this afternoon with an individual who was wearing a shirt with the flying WV on it.
How come you're wearing that WV shirt? The hell's that mean? Does it mean we're veterans? War veterans, maybe? How come you ain't, if you're a war veteran, how come you ain't wearing a shirt with the American flag on it, huh?
West Virginia. Blue, gold, old gold and blue, that's our colors. The flying WV, it's a neat little logo. Came along long about the time Don Nealon arrived in Morgantown to coach the Mountaineers for 20 years. Over the course of those 20 years, of course, not a lot of people can claim that they've got something in common with the likes of a Billy Graham. But by the time Don Nealon's career at West Virginia University was complete, it was well understood that there were only, Don Nealon and Billy Graham had one thing in common with regard to this state. They were the only two people who could get 60,000 people to jump on their feet and yell, Jesus Christ. I would know. Oh, I would know, I would know. But those look like the salad days now that the poor Mountaineers are stuck out in the Big 12, playing teams that we've hardly ever heard of before, traveling 1,000 miles for road games while we lose 100-year-old rivalries. But, hey, it's July. We're not even into two-a-days yet, so we can't be talking football yet. We just can't. And besides, people will tune out. Mm-hmm. I know. Jim, with a note, says, my God, what you're reading sounds like the script of a reform school movie. Or, he continues, the whole damn thing sounds like a really bad after-school special. Maybe that's the thing, Jim. Maybe we live in one of the alternate universes where it's just a bad after-school special. Meanwhile, Bill in Allentown wants to know, where can I buy Mind Your Own Fucking Business? I know a few people who could use the stuff. Well, frankly, with the way things are running in this country, the regular medicine cabinet bottles aren't going to do it. We need it in 55-gallon drums with siphon hoses. Meanwhile, Steve in New York says, subject line, Ron Johnson, I'm wondering, are the photos the Russians have of him with a dead girl or a live boy? Well, he is from Wisconsin. There could be cattle involved, Steve. I wouldn't be overlooking that if I were you. Mm-mm. So we're far enough removed now from the great big moment of world salvation in which Julius Geezer secured nuclear safety for us and our posterity by giving a hand job to Kim Jong-un. Mm-hmm. Mike Pompeo, And remember, anytime you mention Mike Pompeo, you have to say, who graduated first in his class from West Point. You have to say that, because the guy keeps acting like someone who, you know, got his college degree from the back of a matchbook with a picture of a pirate on it. Draw the pirate, Mike. Draw the pirate. Draw Spunky. Mm-hmm. CNN reporting today that things didn't, even Mike Pompeo, who graduated first in his class at West Point, with the benefit of hindsight, it didn't go things didn't go as well as he might have hoped they would. Actually, describing it, Pompeo said that his meeting in North Korea was, it went as badly as it could have gone. Yet, oddly enough, it has yet to be described by Julius Geiser as horrible, horrible, terrible, awful, horrible. You get the, And by the way, interesting conversations following last night's discussion. Because it really feels odd to me when I get to that place where I feel like I'm trying to communicate something and I don't know if I'm getting across. And I think I got the sense that I'm beginning to get the idea across that things are worse than we actually think they are. I know, that's a real little ray of sunshine kind of position to take. But in light of where we are, is it really out there to say that? Yeah, right. So we'll just kind of keep an eye on the issue. I got busy today, Agnes and I did. Got some phone calls in to Joe Manchin's office. You know, they were really polite. I mean, and that's the key, okay? You gotta take a nice deep breath before you call. Because if you're going, before they say hello, things are not going to go well. And so I had a lovely conversation. I tried to call Joe Manchin's office, and this, of course, is in regard to the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh. I tried to call his office in Washington, D.C., long and long, and I wasn't getting through. His lines were absolutely melting down. But I did get through to his Charleston office, and they were more than happy to take my message for the senator. And in fact, downright genial. And I patiently and quietly and calmly explained my position on the matter. I said, now, ma'am, I'm a Democrat. I'm not somebody who used to be something and then became a Democrat. I signed up as a Democrat from day one, and I've been a Democrat the whole time. And I just wanted to call and let you know that I have every intention, or had, of voting for Joe Manchin this November. But I said, ma'am, you need to understand that for me, at least, a West Virginian whose family goes back a long ways here, the Brett Kavanaugh vote is going to be a deal breaker. Because the fact of the matter is, ma'am, if I want somebody who votes for Republican nominees for the Supreme Court, I might as well have a Republican now, shouldn't I? Well, yeah. So we've got a president who's under investigation, whose family's under investigation, whose son's under investigation, whose daughter's done God knows how many things. And we're going to let that guy, whose entire presidency may be illegitimate, we're going to let him have a second A second Supreme Court nominee? I said, ma'am, this is unacceptable. I mean, I wasn't even as animated as I've been talking here. I said, this is just not, that's not acceptable. So I need Senator Manchin to stand with the Democrats in this state and stand with the Democrats in the Senate and do the right thing. And I didn't, you know, I didn't go on at her about all the times he's pissed me off or anything. Just, I need him to do the right thing. And as I followed the coverage this morning, and she was like, well, you know, I will certainly pass that along. I said, well, I thank you. Do you want to just have your name added to the tally, or would you like a written response? I said, no, I want the written response. It'll be curious to see what kind of written response I get, depending on which way he votes. Thought it might be handy to have. I said, ma'am, do you mind me asking how the tally's running? Because she was the one that brought up the tally. I didn't. She said, well, you know, it's kind of funny. Yesterday, before the name was announced, it was running a little bit in favor of him voting for the nominee. I said, really? She said, but the funny thing is, now that the person's name has been announced, today it's running considerably against it. And I said, well, how about that? I said, well, you have a lovely day, ma'am. Well, you too. And so that was today. This goes back to the nomination, I think, of Sammy Bad Breath Alito. Back then, Robert Byrd was still a senator from West Virginia. He was still among the quick. And he gave this tormented, tortured, convoluted story about how he was going to vote for Samuel Alito because Samuel Alito would protect our religious freedom. And he told this story about getting handwritten letters with rings on it from where the coffee cups had sat on it, and a little bit of crumbly donut sugar on it, and people to my constituents, good God-fearing West Virginians, had taken the time to write out a handwritten letter to me, and they sent it to me, and I want you to know that struck me with the sincerity of their opinions. The only problem was that there was no way that such a letter could have arrived, because such letters being mailed to Washington, D.C. got hung up in anti-terrorism, anti-anthrax screening for about 6 weeks. That's the problem with actually writing to your elected representatives in Washington, D.C. So odds are the whole thing was baloney. But I'm giving consideration to getting out a coffee cup, put a little coffee in it, actually put a little coffee on the bottom of it, and setting it on the piece of paper, and maybe running across the river to the Kroger and picking up a box of, I don't have to go to Kroger, I can just go to the Rippy Mart across the river. We don't have them over here. But going to the Rippy Mart across the river and getting me a dozen Krispy Kreme donuts. You know, you put one of those little suckers in the microwave for about 5 seconds, and it's just as hot and magnificent and utterly wonderful as it was when it rolled off the belt there at the Krispy Kreme bakery, and they got the neon sign going in the front that says, hot now. And I'm thinking about getting me, putting a coffee ring on it, and eating my blazing hot, hotter than the interior of the sun, blisters the roof of your mouth, microwaved Krispy Kreme donut. I'm eating it over top of the paper, and getting some crumbly sugar on it, and then sitting down and handwriting a letter to Joe Manchin explaining exactly what I'm thinking. But that's just me, and that's just Joe. We got more problems than just Joe, because we've got a Claire McCaskill problem, and we've got a Joe Donnelly problem there in Talibandiana. And, you know, even if Joe Donnelly was running against a straight-up Nazi, there are a lot of Democrats in this country right now that are running in November against straight-up Nazis. He'd still have to worry. Because, you know, it could very well be that as long as that Nazi says that he's a friend of the precious little fetuses, that Joe Donnelly could lose to the Nazi. Notwithstanding the fact that the idea of a fetus fetishist Nazi is kind of antithetical given the history of the Nazis. But never mind, let's not get bogged down. So anyway, there's a Joe Donnelly problem, and this is a particular problem because, gol dang it, there just aren't that many people in North Dakota. We have a Heidi Heitkamp problem. Because those are the four that we've got to absolutely keep with the Democratic caucus. Now, I know he suffers from a severe deficit of ideological purity, but Doug Jones, for instance, down in Alabama, who said that he doesn't think there's any reason to delay the hearing on the nominee. Well, he also said no thank you when he was invited to be a stage prop for the harangutan at the White House a week or so ago. So there's that. But before, and I mention all this because all the coverage, it seemed like, on the for-profit media this morning and into the day was of powdered, pampered, panjandrum pundits saying, well, you know, what we've really got to do is we got to find out how the noted Republican moderate Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska feel about all of this. That's what we got. We got to find that out. Well, before it even matters whether or not Lisa Murkowski or Susan Collins, noted Republican moderate, who gets a lot of mileage out of being a noted Republican moderate and then turns around and votes just like every other white-wing POS member of the Republican caucus in the United States Senate. Before we get to that, we gotta hold the Democratic caucus together. And just a practice tip. Referring to any of them as neoliberal establishment shills is not the way to get them to vote the right way. I'm not saying that I know what the right way is, but I can guarantee you calling them neoliberal establishment shills ain't it. So if you happen to be in, Missouri Stan, you might want to be getting out. I think they've got Krispy Kreme donuts. I mean, personally, I'm just not a Dunkin' Donuts guy. And I don't care much for their coffee. But they got donuts out in Missouri. You can get a little donut sugar. You can put your coffee ring on it. Call her and then write to her. Quit telling us how to send letters to our senators, Bob. But like I said, North Dakota's the problem because there's so many maggots there. And it's gonna be difficult, possibly even more difficult than Joe Manchin or Joe Donnelly, certainly more difficult than Claire McCaskill, to keep Heidi Heitkamp in line. Because she gets all fluttery in the knees and just kind of turns to jello at the mere thought of Donald J. Trump, it appears. So we got that. But I think if you consider the time frame we're operating in, the window is very narrow. Now, see, Will in Chicago has already taken action. He says in the chat room there, I've signed a petition to Senator Joe Donnelly and will call in the morning. I would have called this morning if I hadn't had an interview. We've got time, just not much of it. And, of course, the thing is, I don't think Claire McCaskill, and I know Joe doesn't, and the other Joe doesn't, and Heidi doesn't, none of them are on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Leaning on the Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee is a big deal, too. And we've reviewed this in the past, but just so it can be fresh in our minds, let's also review the Republican members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Chairman Chuck Grassley, Orrin Hatch, who has his nose so far up Donald Trump's rear end that you can see his smiling face when Julius Geezer yawns. And then there's Senator Lindsey Graham and Senator John Cornyn, Senator Mike Lee, he of the Constitution from Utah, and of course there's anointed Booker Eaton, future King of America, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz of Texas, and noted mavericky Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse, Mike Crapo of Idaho, Tom Phillis of North Carolina, and yes, occasionally cranky old John Kennedy of Louisiana, leaving one person on the Republican side that might possibly, maybe, just sorta, kinda, but I wouldn't count on it, prove helpful. And that, of course, is that practitioner of Parthian shots with rubber-tipped arrows, Jeff Flake of Arizona Stan. We should be in pretty good shape on the Democratic side. Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Mazie Hirono, Richard Blumenthal, Chris Coons, Amy Klobuchar, Sheldon Whitehouse, Dick Durbin, Pat Leahy, Dianne Feinstein. But it would put Chinless Mitch in a hell of a fix if he had to break the rules and say that a nominee who did not have the support, the majority support of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and send the nomination onto the floor. Now, Chinless Mitch doesn't give a tinker's damn for rules, and he would do it, but it would at least be further proof of his innate corruption. So that's sort of where the Kavanaugh thing stands. It's 14 minutes past the hour. I'm trying not to talk much about fundraising because I kind of despise it. It takes a lot of the fun out of the program. But the fact of the matter is, we are $668 behind the eight ball on the 10th day of July. It's kind of unusual to get that far behind the eight ball this early in the month, it seems. Let's run over and, got the green news report and stuff, but we'll take the break later. Let's run over and check in with Steve from Georgia Stan. Hey, Steve.
What's going on, Bob?
I'm having fun. How about you?
You can run the Green News Report if you want. I don't mind holding.
That's okay.
I was just wanted to let you know, man, this optimism, this blue wave thing that everybody thinks is going on is a bunch of shit. This crazy fucker, this Brian Kemp, is actually and that's a scary fucker, man.
Isn't he the one that had the ad down there where with the shotgun pointed at the boy?
At his son, his future son-in-law, yeah, and he keeps stepping it up. He keeps stepping up there. Love him. And Casey Cagle's no prize, but he's more in the line of Nathan Deal, what we have now, who as far as Republicans go, I mean, he's the best of the worst.
So, so when is your primary?
Well, it's our it's down to a runoff now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I keep forgetting. Southern state runoff stupidity. Yeah.
Yep, and I don't know when that's going to come to pass, but there's only one poll, and it's out of Alabama that has him ahead, this Kemp guy, man, and he just scares the hell out of me. And if those,
I don't reckon you can go and vote in the Republican.
No, game. I can't. I voted in the Democratic. I can't jump sides. Now, if I wanted shenanigans, and if I'd have had any forethought, I'd have voted Republican out the gate, and then I could have went and voted against them. But you know, I'm kind of like you. I got to vote my conscience. I can't jump fence just for the sake of jumping fence, you know.
Well, right. I mean, that's dirty. That's dirty pool anyway, isn't it?
Right, and there shouldn't even be an open primary. That's craziness, you know.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think open primaries are just an invitation to chicanery.
Shenanigans,
those two.
But you know, I'm really concerned over this blue wave that everybody keeps pumping. I think they're just pumping blue sunshine up our ass. I don't see it. You?
I badly want there to be one. Can I put it that way?
Well, who doesn't? I mean, that's our only choice of getting this crazy son of a bitch out. If Mueller was to bring something down after the Senate changes, which is that January, middle of January, whatever. But even then, you're going to have, you know, a majority in the House and at least 2/3 majority in the Senate. And that's a pipe dream, isn't it?
Well, 2/3, it's a pretty tall order. And that's part of what in my conversation with Todd last night. That's part of the reality that we're dealing with. We have a broken system because we are in constitutional crisis because there is nothing that will make the Republican majority do its job. The only hope this country has is to have Democratic majorities in both houses of Congress. As of January 2019. I mean, we don't have that.
Yeah, crazy like a fox. He's stacking the deck. And that's exactly why he had this deal going. And, you know, I always wondered why Justice Kennedy just skedaddled. And now it's all starting to make sense, you know?
Well, and since you mentioned that, I don't know if you caught it on CNN. They trotted out Raj Shah.
Raj, yeah. Sarah Hucklebags Light, yeah.
Yeah,
her backup liar. Yeah.
Old Raj.
And he wouldn't deny it.
And let's just go to the clip, shall we?
Please.
You got a minute, right?
Well, sure.
Okay.
In the selection process, did President Trump speak to outgoing Justice Anthony Kennedy at all about Judge Kavanaugh prior to the nomination?
So the president did speak with Justice Kennedy yesterday to inform him of his choice.
Prior to that. John,
yeah, let me answer. And he met with Justice Kennedy at the White House on the Wednesday of the week before last when Justice Kennedy made his announcement. So the president has talked to Justice Kennedy, but this was the president's choice. Understand that mm-hmm. Judge Kavanaugh was on his publicly disclosed list as far back as last November, and he has a judicial record with over 300 opinions, a dozen which have been affirmed by the Supreme Court, and many others that have been cited by appeals court judges and lower courts throughout the country. This is an influential judge.
Understand,
Raj,
I guess what I'm asking, did Justice... I
had to break into the filibuster there, but we continue.
Kennedy expressed his support for Judge Kavanaugh prior to the nomination last week.
Well, I'll allow Justice Kennedy to speak for himself. Obviously,
which is convenient because he ain't saying shit.
Clerk for him in the Supreme Court, so did a few others who were on the president's list. Mm-hmm. But again, Judge Kavanaugh's record, his writings, his appreciation for the appropriate role for the judiciary speaks for itself.
He has an extensive record. I remember his confirmation process for the appeals court back in 2003 and then ultimately 2006. There are reports this morning that as far back as months ago that Brett Kavanaugh was used. Justice Kennedy basically made clear that he would like to see Judge Kavanaugh as his replacement. Did anyone inside the White House or connected to the White House speak to Anthony Kennedy about Judge Kavanaugh dating back months?
Well, again, I'm not going to read out private conversations that Justice Kennedy had with either members of the White House or the president. What I will say is that Judge Kavanaugh's qualifications, mm-hmm. his background, his over a decade of rulings.
In other words, yes. Right, Steve?
Exactly. He didn't come out and deny it. So what does that tell you? There was some inside baseball going on.
And you take that and you couple it with the fact that Justice Kennedy's kid was the billion-dollar loan officer for Donald Trump when nobody else would give him so much as a nickel's worth of credit over, and that went on at Deutsche Bank, which is up to its eyeballs in dirty Russian money business. And you've got a pretty clear kind of picture, don't you?
And my gut's telling me this clown's going to be confirmed. I mean, I don't see how we can hold together a solid 49 on Aaron, because you're going to have all, you know, like your Manchins and, you know, your handful of other ones. Then you got to keep people like Susan Collins, and you got to flip a couple of those. And I can hear Susan Collins now with her quivering voice. Well, after careful review, I just got to take him on his word that he is going to abide by past precedents. Bullshit.
He hasn't demonstrated any hostility to Roe versus Wade when he was testifying before the committee, so I have to give the president the benefit of the doubt. Elections have consequences.
Even though she's on record as saying the son of a bitch is crazy, meaning Trump. And, you know, it just doesn't look good. It doesn't look good. I'm scared. I'm scared for me. I'm scared for you. I'm scared for kids. I'm scared for grandkids, nieces and nephews. Well, I mean, what are we doing? What are we doing? What the fuck are we doing? And if you listen to Washington Journal, you end up pulling your hair out. I know it's hung like Jesus, and that's my other Washington Journal buddy. He'll tell you.
No, it's Todd.
If that's any indication, if that's any indication of the pulse of how America's thinking, what did the guy with the bird that passed away used to say? We're fucked, or we're doomed, or
we're screwed, Bob. Yeah, that's Scott in San Diego.
Yeah,
otherwise known as the guy with the bird. Yes.
Yeah, and it's true. We're so screwed, and that's why we need to keep people like you and Randy and Stephanie, and even guys you don't really like Tom Hartman. Yeah, I know he's way out there in the ether, and I don't always agree with him. But we got to keep progressive voices on the air. We have to, and that's why I'm begging everybody that can hear with the sound of my voice, please help the horn out. God damn, we need it now more than ever. I've tried the last few days, and I feel like the Lone Ranger, you know?
Well, I don't feel like getting
any help, you
know?
Yeah,
you got a little help last night from Jack, and of course, you know, let's be fair, the subscribers are there, but, you know, they knocked down a week of fundraising. So, you know, the idea is if we can keep up with the first 3 weeks, then we don't have to sweat the end of the month, because that's usually where the sweating takes place.
And wouldn't it be ideal if we had enough just weekly subscribers? Hell, I would triple subscription just so we wouldn't have to worry about this crap anymore going forward, you know?
Well, I mean, from where I stand, and see, this is what makes it, you know, double plus bad frustrating. We got a challenge on the table. We've got to beat the Swede challenge on the table for the month of July. $250 of 1,000 got knocked down, but that's beyond regular fundraising. That's to try to get the horn to Netroots Nation so that we can sort of get a little broader exposure.
So where are you at now? The numbers you've been throwing out here lately are scary. I mean,
well, they are scary because that's how far behind we've fallen.
And if you can't pay the bills, show's over.
Yeah.
That's it.
Glenn just jumped into, so I don't have to worry about uneven numbers. We're down to 660.
Well, thank you, Glenn.
Yeah, thank you indeed, Glenn. We're down to 660. And that's, you know, that's to be even with today, which is Tuesday. It could be absolutely breathtaking by Friday. And again, Friday's the 13th, 14th, 15th. That's basically mid month.
I mean, find your couch money, find whatever you can. I mean, I know times are hard. Christ, I'm being squeezed as hard as everybody else, but we've got to manage to somehow keep you and all these other progressive voices on the air, or we don't have a Chinaman's choice in hell, you know, and I didn't mean that as a slur to anybody in China. I apologize. I retract that. We don't have a chance in hell.
I understand. I completely understand. And
I apologize for the slip of the tongue. I'm just spitballing.
No. It's been used a lot more than by you. So
right, and I don't mean it as a slur. God knows I love everybody. So
you absolutely do. Don't beat yourself up. But you're right, and you know this isn't just a matter of well, look. Lest anybody think otherwise, doing these radio rows is work. Okay. Go ask Malloy if it's work. He'll tell you. I've seen it. We've worked together on some of these radio rows in the past. And so yeah, it's New Orleans. You ever been to New Orleans in August?
Hot. Well, of course, it's hot now everywhere, you know.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's a special brand of hot. Seems like every time I've ever, you know what? That's the truth. I just thought about it. Every time I've ever been to New Orleans, it's been in August. And so that damp, sticky, clingy, air you can wear, kind of. That's the New Orleans that I know. But it'll be 3 days of hard damn work, and then Saturday I won't broadcast. That's the last day anyway, and maybe I'll just check out some of the goings on and whatnot.
Nice. So when are you going there, Bob?
The theory is it starts on the 1st of August.
Nice.
I'd need to leave here probably on the 30th, because you don't want to just road warrior your ass into town. It would be better to be there and have the whole 31st to just get everything set up and know that everything works. But, you know, anyway, 29th or 30th, drive down, and then it's over on the 4th, getaway on the 5th, go east about 100 miles, see my sister and brother-in-law for a little bit.
Nice.
And come home.
To get you a Bob break. That's nice, man.
Well, I mean, there's not a lot of Bob break built into that.
If we were building
a Bob break, we'd talk about, a week or so. I don't know. But anyway, it's at where we are, 660 in the hole. And
right. Let's think about what's in front of us.
Yeah, it's not even worth discussing, frankly.
Right. But, I'm pleading with everybody, that could hear the sound of my voice, please, please help if you can. I mean, don't hurt yourself. God knows we don't want anybody.
No, we
to
always
do that.
Make it clear. I mean, don't send in the medicine money. Don't
the rent money or electric money or anything like that. Don't do anything crazy. But if you got any extra couch quarters laying around, every little bit helps. Correct?
Absolutely, it all adds up.
All right, Bob. Well, Miss Karen just walked in, so I'm going to get on out of here, okay?
Oh, are y'all off? I loved the Ferris wheel footage. That was fun.
we're not going anywhere tonight. I just feel like I ought to spend some time with her.
Absolutely.
I'll still be listening.
But I should let you know that I was vicariously terrified. I don't do carnival rides.
Not at all. Yeah, they're hung on by those cheap bolts and they're slapped together in a day, you know. But I'll try to think about that. When you're living in Trump's world, how much more dangerous can it get?
Well, that's you know, sadly that's true.
That's the perspective I put it in. But
well, exactly.
But that's all I got for now, Bob. Keep up the good work, and I love you, bro. You hang in there, okay?
All right, thanks, Steve. Thanks so much, and please say hello to Miss Karen for me, and as well to little Cletus and little Twiggy. They're safe again until the New Year's fireworks, right?
I believe that's the next fireworks holiday. Let's see, what's coming up? Labor Day is not a fireworks holiday. Yep, so you're correct, sir.
Yeah, so, well, that's roughly six peaceful months, and good for them. All right, Steve, you have yourself a good evening, my friend.
All right, thanks for taking my call, man.
Pleasure, thanks for making it. Bye now. Right. That's our buddy Steve from Georgistan. And when I say he's an all-around great guy, that's not just a title. He is. He's got a great spirit. Thanks very kindly to Ralphs. Ralphs jumping in to help out. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so much. That's takes us down to $610 to go. I apologize for, you know, not being able to do this without relying on the community to help keep it going. But I deeply appreciate the fact that you are willing to help out. You'll never know how much. I mean, that's what keeps this all going. That's what makes this community, is the fact that we stand with each other to make a space where we can talk and communicate and bounce ideas and off each other, and generally push back the madness. Silent R. Lamar letting me know, man, it's hot in my office today. Somebody has hot pockets. I got hot puppies. Yeah, it's a mite toasty down that way, I reckon. We've had a string of just beautiful days here in the hills. Just freaking gorgeous. And, well, you cherish them, because, you know, and I'll see people, sure is hot, and I'm like, yeah, ain't it? We're going to remember this very fondly when we're freezing our little asses off in the hillbilly winter, aren't we? And I start thinking like that after the solstice, because every day gets a little shorter now, a little shorter, a little shorter, a little shorter. Lee with a note from Huffington Post. Susan Collins says Brett Kavanaugh is clearly qualified for Supreme Court. Oh, for pity's sakes!
When you look at the credentials that Judge Kavanaugh brings to the job, it'll be very difficult for anyone to argue that he's not qualified for the job. He clearly is qualified for the job, Collins told reporters on Tuesday when asked whether she faced an easier decision with Kavanaugh than Judge Amy Comey Barrett, who was on the president's shortlist and is seen as more hostile to reproductive rights. Oh, by the way, is anybody surprised that it was a white guy? Did any person of color even make the list? Oh, hell no, man or woman, no. And it wasn't going to be Amy Coney Barrett, because she's a woman. And he can't, there's already three women up there that are sitting in potentially sitting in judgment of him. He wasn't going to add a fourth, you know, because you know how them women folk are. They get together and they gab like a bunch of damn hens, and next thing you know, those three women up there will have her turned, and all of a sudden she'll be thinking it's not okay for him to grab women by the pussy. So there. Now, about that business of Kavanaugh's eminent qualifications, look, there's a written opinion out there
where he tried to stop a teenage immigrant girl from being able to get a pregnancy terminated. She wanted it. He didn't want her to have it. In the name of Jesus! That's how it, works. I don't understand what anybody's saying about head-on.live crashing. I'm still sending. Let me see what Brother Deacon Ace has got to say about that. Scared me. At one point, Lee said head-on.live crashed out. I hope it wasn't the website. Hey, thanks. Hung Like Jesus says, put me down for $20 and I'm just going to bite the bullet and sub. Hell, burn $10 on the way home from work, not even thinking. Hung Like Jesus says, I'm on headon.live and we're good here. No telling what's going on. That's strange indeed. It's back. Yay. Thanks, Sparky. You're good now. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. That's just odd. I mean, I didn't even see any substantial buffering or any buffering at all. Hard to say. Thank you, but thank you. Thank you, Hung Like Jesus. I appreciate it. So that takes us down to wow, 590. We broke the 600 barrier. Awesome. Awesome. So thank you. Thank you very kindly. Well, 5-9, that's progress. That's real progress. Thank you. Like I said, we've got the Green News Report coming up. Let's just take a couple of minutes and check in with Brad and Desi and see what's going on in their little corner of this mad world, shall we? Yes.
It's Tuesday, July 10, 2018.
Scott Pruitt was essentially head of the Pollution Protection Agency.
While we were out, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt forced to resign. But his replacement...
There are a lot of insiders who think he could actually be even more effective than Pruitt was because he is so low-key.
Spells bad news for the environment and public health. Starbucks joins the global movement to end plastic pollution, plus...
Temperatures soar well into the triple digits, up 25 degrees above normal.
Extreme temperatures shatter all-time heat records around the world.
All of those records shattered and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and... snarky comment.
Besides being the greatest scam artist I've ever seen, I mean, I really think Scott Pruitt might be three raccoons under a trench coat.
This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, finally, Scott Pruitt, EPA chief, pushed out of his job. It's incredible that it took this long.
Yeah, scandal-plagued Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt resigned on Friday amid a growing wave of corruption investigations into his questionable ethics, his lavish spending, his potential violations of federal record-keeping and whistleblower protection laws, and abuse of his office for personal gain.
To be clear, he didn't resign. He was fired. They let him pretend that he resigned.
Well, he pretended pretty well in a fawning and servile resignation letter to Trump. He expressed zero remorse for his avalanche of scandals and instead portrayed himself as the victim of, quote, unrelenting attacks. Despite Pruitt's departure, the numerous probes into his ethics, spending, and management will continue.
Good. Lock him up.
For the record, the corporate media really only covered Pruitt because of his rampant corruption, which has been epic, to be sure, but not so much for his dismantling of pollution regulations. Apparently, making America sick and polluted again is just not as sexy as scandal. But don't worry, on his way out, Pruitt gave Americans a parting gift of more pollution and more cancer. On his last day, he issued a big loophole for so-called glider trucks. These are refurbished, super-polluting, long-haul trucks, and exempted them from air pollution and emissions laws. Pruitt based the exemption for glider trucks on a discredited study funded by a major glider truck manufacturer. And Politico reports that Pruitt's EPA has suppressed an agency health assessment containing serious warnings about the toxic chemical formaldehyde, declaring that most Americans inhale enough formaldehyde vapor from everyday products in their daily lives to put them at risk of developing leukemia, cancers, and other illnesses. EPA sources say that delaying the report's release is in part an attempt to undermine the agency's only independent research unit that tracks the toxic health impacts of chemicals.
And so what about his replacement, Andrew Wheeler, an actual coal industry lobbyist? Will he be any better?
Well, unfortunately, no. Pruitt's current replacement is unlikely to be an improvement. As you mentioned, acting EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler is a former coal industry lobbyist and a longtime Washington insider. He's also dedicated to Trump's anti-regulatory agenda. And because of his experience on Capitol Hill, Wheeler is likely to be more effective than Pruitt at carrying out environmental rollbacks that can withstand court challenges.
Careful what you wish for, Scott Pruitt opponents.
Meanwhile, global warming intensified heat waves shattered all-time high heat records across the Northern Hemisphere, from North America to Europe to Africa and Russia. Just a sampling, Burbank, California recorded a blistering new all-time hottest temperature of 114 degrees. Denver, Colorado saw an all-time high record of 105 degrees.
Denver, the mile-high city, it got to 105?
Yes.
Wow.
In Quebec, Canada, at least 70 people died due to extreme heat. And most astonishing is the new heat record set in northern Siberia, where temperatures topped 90 degrees Fahrenheit.
In Siberia.
In Siberia.
Wow.
In Japan, extreme record rainfall has triggered deadly flash floods and landslides, killing more than 100 people. Now, these all-time heat and rainfall records are all in line with climate scientists' predictions that global warming will bring more frequent and intense extreme weather events.
Don't tell Scott Pruitt or his replacement, Andrew Wheeler.
Finally, a bit of good news. Starbucks announced on Monday that it will phase out use of plastic straws at all of its stores by 2020. And switch instead to new recyclable strawless lids and straws made from biodegradable materials. Starbucks already made the switch in Seattle after that city recently implemented a new ban on plastic straws.
Well, suck it up, Starbucks fans. And Starbucks, why are you waiting until 2020? For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Ooh, I haven't heard that one in a long time. It's about 16 minutes before the hour, a little over, a little past the halfway point of the program this evening, and I want to send out some thank yous. I hate it when the fundraising gets as dire sounding as that sounded, but when it's dire, it's dire. But thank you very kindly to Kathleen there in what I always think of as the land of the big chicken. Is the big chicken still there? People in that area will know. Here, let me. I bet Steve from Georgia Stan will know. Thank you, Kathleen. Kathleen says, "Love your show." Well, that is so gratifying to hear. Thank you, Kathleen. So that takes us down. 565, and then Daniel. Daniel became a brand new subscriber. Thank you, Daniel, to join the subscribers on the 10th of the month. And that takes us down to 555. So 555 to go. And, well, okay, I guess we'll find out later. Apparently I'm not, I hope I haven't disappeared again. Yes, thank you. Thank you very kindly. And courtesy of Silent R. Lamar, in an effort to get this lupine pest off the porch, a $200 challenge on the table. $200 matching challenge. So the next $200 that comes in will be doubled by Silent R. Lamar, which would leave only a $155 deficit, which would be, at this point in time, stunningly wonderful. So that's on the table. Hopefully folks will respond to it, courtesy of Silent R. Lamar, and that'll take us down to, you know, like I said, only $155 to go. Marty says that 90 in Siberia, being exiled will never be the same. Yeah, but you, there's exiled and there's exiled, Marty. You don't want to be in Siberia when the with the permafrost gone. Because there's all kinds of nasties that are tucked away in there that could wipe out oodles and oodles and oodles of humanity. You know, pandemics that we're absolutely unprepared for. We're not, but then again, we're not prepared for any pandemics. Let's not kid ourselves. By the way, Todd in South Carolina stands as do what I can for right now. Yes, you do. Thank you, Todd. I really got a lot from the conversation yesterday. I hope I gave some also. You did. It was a fantastic conversation. And everybody appreciates, Todd says, Steve from Georgia Stan's efforts. Yes. Okay, time to move along to some other topics. I missed this. I didn't get to this one yesterday because we got all wrapped up in the question of how far down the road to hell we actually are. And again, I've been thinking about it all day long. And just the simple. Because at the root of it, and if we want to talk about it some more, we can if you want to. The lines are open and everything. Line, 304-574-8178. I'm gonna try to take another run at restoring the stress line. Might take a couple of days, but I've got an old phone that I might be able to just get one of those monthly subscription kind of cards and won't be used for anything else, and we'll just make it a line here if I can afford to do it, and we'll see if we can get the, maybe I can call tech support or something like that, right? But we have this notion that everything in our governmental and legal system just works. Because that's the way it is. Any American who has ever found him or herself running afoul of the law in another country figures out pretty quickly that there's nothing universal about what goes on here. And we have brutal laws that most people never find themselves having to deal with. But the essential mechanics, the machinery of it, the fact that a subpoena gets issued and you got to answer the subpoena, or bad things happen, that's taken for granted. That's taken as given. It just has to be that way, right? But it doesn't. And now, with the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh out there, who has written fairly extensively that the President of the United States should never have to deal with anything as recherché as, say, a subpoena or an indictment, which is just ridiculous. Maybe he figures he's got the fix in. Maybe this is enough. Maybe he's all good now, and he can just count on the subpoena being quashed once Kavanaugh gets on the bench. So it becomes a race between Mueller and the Senate Judiciary Committee. I don't know. Robert Mueller is a very, very intelligent man. I don't think anybody can force him to adopt a timetable that is anything but his own making. But damn, maybe I'm just overthinking it. Maybe it would put more pressure on Mitch McConnell to get Kavanaugh on the court to have a subpoena issue going up. This is the kind of stuff. If anybody who's had a cup of coffee in law school knows this. This is the kind of academic stuff that is the stuff of final exam questions. What happens if the president ignores a subpoena is more of an ultimate exam question in law school than, say, explain the rule against perpetuities. Don't even try, Jesus Christ. But if the Tinkerbell magic dies, in other words, you have to believe in the Constitution for it to exist, we're in huge trouble. I mean, that's a Rubicon that we can't uncross. And just the idea of him self-quashing a subpoena fills me with dread, because it's not far from there to what Peter Falk referred to as atonal music in The In-Laws, one of my favorite comedies. But stepping away from that, and I just had Jim ring in. I don't know what happened. I answered the call, and it fell away. Just a gentle reminder that everything is not Trump. Corporate America is still out there being corporate America, and they're relatively happy with Trump because they get to do pretty much anything they want to. But that's what they get to do anytime a Republican is in the White House. Now, the source of this story should be a non-story. A simple resolution at the United Nations, at the World Health Assembly. It's a no-brainer. It's a simple resolution that was going to be introduced, decades of science behind it, and it encouraged member nations, you know, everybody, to take action to make sure that bullshit advertising about substitutes for breast milk would be limited. In addition, the idea was for the resolution to suggest that governments actively support breastfeeding babies because that is the best nutritional support a newborn, an infant, can have. We evolved to feed like that in infancy. Babies are supposed to feed that way. In the first few days immediately following birth, in the colostrum that a mother produces, are a huge array of antibodies that keep the baby from getting sick in the toxic, dirty world into which it has emerged from the relative safety of the womb. So that was it. Crack down on bullshit advertising and formally support breastfeeding. Okay. This is a problem. Why? Well, this is a problem because capitalism. Because the infant formula industry and the baby food industry is tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars a year to the companies that produce that crap and the shareholders who support it. And I call it crap because, well, I mean, did you ever wonder how? Because, I mean, baby food, we take baby food, you know, the little jars and, you know, we take that as a given. You know, babies on liquids, and then baby moves slowly into, you know, rice, cereal, oats, whatever. And then eventually the charming photo of the baby with its first spoonful of pureed carrots or peas or whatever. You know, no real seasoning in it or anything, but there's no Gerber's Chipotle corn out there. They're just, no. Very bland. But it's so ubiquitous, we almost, I don't, if you're like me, you're like, I took a minute, wait. How did babies get fed before there was baby food? And the answer is that mama, almost always mama, created foodstuffs that were mashed up and slowly introduced the baby to solid food. We know from studies of the last remaining hunter-gatherer societies that one of the ways that those societies managed their population was by breastfeeding for a very long time as a means of preventing ovulation, by keeping the fat stores of the mother down. Makes you wonder if the proliferation of non-natural sources of food for infants may have actually contributed to the explosion of population on planet Earth. I remember back in a book called 1493. And I had the author on the program, and he was fascinating. He talked about the change in the population change in China that took place after the introduction of the sweet potato as a result of the Columbian Exchange. It blew up. Just because of simple changes in diet. But I'm sort of straying from where I was. So this resolution was on the table. And it was as simple as I've described it. And the United States strong-armed. It was going to be a point of pride, I guess. That Ecuador was going to introduce the resolution. And the United States went to Ecuador and said, "Listen, bub, you introduce that breastfeeding resolution and you're not going to see any, you'll never see USAID again. Everything we send to you, everything we give to you, yeah, well, we won't give it to you anymore. Because we don't need those filthy women out there thinking that they can feed their babies without our corporate goo." Really? And Ecuador went, "Okay, we won't. Don't hurt us." And then the resolution went around to some other countries. Patty Rundle, with a British group called Baby Milk Action, interviewed by the New York Times, said that what the United States did was, quote, "tantamount to blackmail, with the U.S. holding the world hostage and trying to overturn nearly 40 years of consensus on the best way to protect infant and young child health." So Ecuador folded. From the New York Times story, the Americans were blunt. If Ecuador refused to drop the resolution, Washington would unleash punishing trade measures and withdraw crucial military aid. The Ecuadorian government quickly acquiesced. Because bullets are more important than breast milk in Ecuador. The showdown over the issue was recounted by more than a dozen participants from several countries, many of whom requested anonymity because they feared retaliation from the United States. Health advocates scrambled to find another sponsor for the resolution, but at least a dozen countries, most of them poor nations in Africa and Latin America, backed off, citing fears of retaliation, according to officials from Uruguay, Mexico, and the United States. You know, this morning, in anticipation of Julius Geezer traveling to the UK and then Brussels, I said The Hague last night, Brussels, for the NATO meetings, and then on to Helsinki for a meeting with his boss. The president of the EU was kind of blunt. He said, "Dear Americans, you haven't many allies left. You might want to think about treating the ones you do have better." This did not sit at all well with Geezer Disgustus. No, standing outside, the orangutan looked at the cameras and said, "We've got plenty of allies, but they're stealing from us. They're robbing us blind. We pay so much more to defend Europe than they do." Utterly oblivious to the almost unprecedented success in the annals of human history of the American effort to keep Europe from turning itself into an abattoir about every generation and a half. We did that. We made that happen. The soil of Europe is soaked in blood and has been for at least 2,100 years. Possibly longer. But we did that. We've succeeded in stopping the bloodier impulses of European nations. I almost think that pisses Trump off. He'd like to see a good European war as long as he or none of his friends had to participate in it. And in point of fact, the boss may tell him that, well, they're very close to being able to overrun Ukraine entirely if he can just make sure that NATO doesn't get involved. I keep thinking about that story from a year and a half, 2 years ago. Maybe longer. I forget in particular what the expertise of the writer was, but he said most of the time it's tiny little things that lead to the great bloodlettings and the great human disasters. A sort of more evidence-laden version of "for want of a nail, the shoe was lost." For want of a shoe, the horse was lost. For want of the horse, the king was lost, etc. And I just watch the daily events as they unfold, and I wonder which one of these things is the seeming cipher that will make the world go mad. And then I realize who's in the White House. But the president of the EU was right. We don't have many allies left. We pissed off the entire world. The people who are still friendly to us are friendly in spite of Donald Trump, not because of Donald Trump. And so there it was. Nations in Africa, nations in Latin America being shaken down until finally, because the goddess of irony is a hard-working goddess, Russia stepped in and said, "We will introduce resolution. It's a good thing mothers breastfeed babies. Capitalist corporation." Nah, they didn't say anything. But they introduced the resolution, Russia did, and all of a sudden the United States shut the fuck up. And meanwhile, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services lied and said, "Well, no, we didn't threaten Ecuador. We recognize not all women are able to breastfeed for a variety of reasons." Nobody said they were. These women should have the choice and access to alternative choice. Women coming from somebody in this administration. Once again, proof that there's no God in the sky, because a lightning bolt did not come down. You know, the spokesperson for saying women need choices. It simply acknowledges the scientific.
Women should have choice and access to alternatives for the health of their babies and not be stigmatized for the ways in which they're able to do so.
Nobody was talking about stigmatizing. The only stigmatizing going on was the bullshit false advertising. Hey, these people are lying to you.
Oh, we've been stigmatized.
But again, please let me remind. That this would have happened in the W administration, this would have happened in the HW administration, this would have happened in the Reagan administration, the Ford administration, the Nixon administration, the Eisenhower administration, because this is the obsequious fawning that the Republican Party is notorious for when it comes to corporate interests. Shareholder profits are more important than a newborn baby's health, according to the party that says it's pro-life. No, baby, it's pro-dividends! Hell yeah. You know it.
Clarence with a note. Bob, I remember Dr. Spock preaching about mothers feeding their babies with their breast milk.
Yeah.
And I also remember that Dr. Spock, not Mr. Spock, Dr. Spock, Benjamin Spock, was excoriated as a commie. Silent R. Lamar says, gimmick infringement. Bob, I enjoyed Gerber as an infant, and as an old man, still do. Cut him a little love. Sorry, hot heat attack. Just cooled down a little bit. Fuck them assholes. Pushing capitalism, but I still like Gerber.
Well, Gerber's been working for, 100 years on a positive brand. One of my nicknames as an infant was the Gerber baby, because there were ads all over the place. Is your baby a Gerber baby? Everybody wants, your baby's not a Gerber baby? What are you, a terrible parent?
Yeah. And by the way, at the same World Health Assembly meeting, just so we can put a little bow on all this, the United States took the side of the pharmaceutical industry. They lost this round, an effort to help poor countries get access to life-saving medications. They lost. On the other hand, in countries that have brutally elevated obesity rates, the United States, with great success, got rid of statements in support of taxes on soda pop. Those statements were pulled from guidelines for attempts to take a bite out of the obesity epidemic that. Well, is all over the, largely all over the developed world, but of course we're kind of patient zero for that. Yeah. Now remind me, there's more after this. Another horror out of our concentration camps. But let's go over and check in. Oh, and thank you to Jason. We're gonna round you up to $10 from that. Yeah, Jason. Thank you, and that'll take us down to 5:45. Okay. Hey, Jim.
Good evening. How are you?
Yeah, I'm muddling along, I guess.
I see. Listen, pursuant to what you were mentioning about. For example, soda pop.
Yeah.
And this stuff is not good for you. It never was. And I can remember when I was in junior high school, my science teacher told each of us to go home and take a Coca-Cola and put a piece of steak in it and then see what happened overnight. And it looked pretty bad.
Well, there was always the put a nail in your Coca-Cola.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, that's just one product that's been pushed over, you know, America. I mean, 50 million times a day at home and work or at play, Coca-Cola or something like that. And another thing, as far as these drugs are concerned that, you know, are that are being pushed on America, and the profits of, for example, like Pfizer, I mean, they're just astronomical. Those people, I don't know what's really done it for them. I guess Viagra certainly helped. I know that got their stocks way up there. But, you know, everything in this country is just based on profit and shareholders. I mean, it was that way even in the days of the early 19th century when you had people like J.P. Morgan and Andrew Carnegie, and there was another one up there, too. They had a series called The Men Who Built America and How They Did It. And it was basically built upon the backs of the working man who had no representation whatsoever. And unions were absolutely forbidden. And, you know, they had strikes and all types of confrontations between the Pinkerton police and I guess the regular government police when they came into being. And the working men really took a real dousing on that. It's just dreadful, the conditions in which these people lived. And then, you know, what happened to them when they tried to at least climb a rung or two above it. But this country has never been really for the working man, only when the working man got together and began to bargain collectively. And I know Jimmy Hoffa was no prince
he did what was necessary to be done.
Yeah, he did.
And the legacy of being corrupted by the mob is considerably later in his career.
Right, and I think that probably cost him his life. When he was very upset after he got out of prison that he thought he could take the union back. And, of course, the deal with Nixon was he couldn't be with the union for, 10 years or something like that. And he may have tried to force the mob's hand on trying to help him expose some bad things. And I don't know, I'm just remembering excerpts from that movie, Hoffa, which I thought was pretty good with Jack Nicholson. And nonetheless, who knows? But in this country, any efforts toward ameliorating the condition of working people has never been done out of the good heart of any corporation or any.
No, it's always been a matter of force.
Exactly.
And I guess that's how they wanted it, because they felt like if they could keep a workforce terrified and underpaid and half starved, and especially in an era when the labor was mainly back-breaking physical labor as opposed to the technical variety, but in many ways nothing's
right.
Changed. I mean, the number of people who are not represented by a union in this country far outweighs those who are. And I saw a story, Agnes sent it along to me a week or so ago, about the price of jobs, and it's something like 2 amputations a week in the meat cutting industry.
Good Lord.
If you ever read any of the stories about the killing factories of outfits like
Sinclair
Smithfield Meats.
Yeah, please. But I know. And who was it? Was it Upton Sinclair who wrote, what do you write, The Blackboard Jungle or something
No,
like
just
that?
The Jungle. Yeah.
The jungle. Okay, I'm confusing one with the other. Excuse me.
The number of students who have read that and sworn off hot dogs forever. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's just absolutely horrible. To tell you the truth, it's even hard for me to think of that stuff, but I know it's there. And on another subject, I want to ask you something here. I'm no political analyst. That's never been my forte. I guess what forte I have would be what you earlier in the program referred to as the slaughters or the slaughterhouse of Europe. For example, 1789 to 1945. And that's sort of been my forte. But going back to a comparison between the elimination of Nixon and efforts to try to get Trump out of there. Now, with Nixon came in 70, his last term was 72 to 70. January of 72 to August of 74, right?
January of 73, he won the 1972 election, but he was not inaugurated until January 73.
Right. I remember that. And, all right, we're talking about over a year and a half to get rid of Nixon.
Yeah, and with the understanding that we're talking about a Congress that was willing to do its job, and the cynics can say, because the Congress was controlled by the other party. The argument being that had it been Republican-controlled Congress, they would have just let Nixon Cruz ride along.
Well, Sam Irwin had a lot to do with that, and he certainly took advantage of his position in the Congress. But
Jim, had Sam not been in the majority, Sam wouldn't have had diddly to say.
Well, there we go. And how long has this thing with Trump been going on with this so-called investigation?
This investigation is still very young.
That's what I thought. Not even half a year, right?
I'm not sure exactly how. It's like 200 days or something like that. But when you set it up against, say, alongside the Benghazi investigation and Butler emails, and if you set it up against Whitewater, then all of these crocodile tears about this investigation must end pretty quickly becomes an obvious exercise in hypocrisy.
Yeah, I was fixed to mention Ken Starr and all the other things that he participated in, and exceeded 2 years, at least. It occupied the last years of Clinton's administration, effectively.
He leaves in January 2001. The Republicans and everybody were still talking about it, but. His last couple of years, you know, he got on, you know, when he was acquitted by the Senate, that day he had something like, what, 70% approval?
Yeah.
Let's see, what date, what was the date on that? February 12th, 1999, so he had a little over 2 years left.
Okay. All right. That's what I meant. Maybe he had 2 years after that happened. I sort of got confused there. It's been a while. But nonetheless, this stuff with Trump, I just don't see them ever getting his sorry ass out of there. I mean, no matter what they come up with. I mean,
well, look, you know, Nixon could have brazen. This is where you get into the part of this that's a parlor game. And what I mean by that is we've only had one presidential trial in the Senate, and that was of Andrew Johnson.
Right.
And it failed by one vote.
Right.
Nixon could have, in theory, brazened it out and said, there's no way they'll get two-thirds of the Senate. But when Howard Baker went to him and said, Dick, you gotta go. You're gonna get impeached. The very threat of impeachment was enough to motivate him to leave because he did not want to be impeached. Well, a generation later, Bill Clinton says, fine, impeach me, bunch of piss ants. Because they were.
He did. I know it. I don't know why Nixon didn't stand his ground because Nixon
couldn't stand his ground. He could not count the votes in the Senate. He could not be sure that because he was goddamn guilty of everything.
Yeah, he was, very much so. And he
the other thing is, Jim, as evil and venal and criminal as he was, there's an argument to be made that some little molecule of him loved his country. You cannot say the same thing about Julius Geezer.
Absolutely. You know, I will take Dick Nixon over Donald Trump any day of the week.
And Dick Nixon
did a lot of good things.
Dick Nixon was convinced by the Republicans who went to him that he would be doing grave harm to the United States of America by forcing the issue.
Well, his health was in decline, too. He realized that he could only stand so much. I mean, right there toward the, you know, I think the end when he finally had to make that decision, he was in Bethesda Naval Hospital.
With phlebitis.
With not only that, but pneumonia, too. I mean, the man was almost dead. I mean, when he went
and
over
went on to,
to
live into his 90s, you know, I mean.
Well, you know, he had good luck there. Because even when he went over to the Middle East the last time, he was horribly riddled with phlebitis and was told not to go, but he could go at any second with a blood clot. And he went ahead and did it. And, you know, even though I voted for President Nixon back in those days, and I was bitterly disappointed by what happened to him and what he did to himself, I mean, I had no idea that his personality was so seriously flawed.
And
the man was a psychological wreck, really.
Oh, that he was. But then again, now with a generation and a half or two behind us now, we get to look at the current occupant of the White House and go, nah, really, how much of a psychological wreck was Nixon? Because Nixon on his worst day, psychologically, mental health-wise, was a gold star patient,
running on all eight cylinders.
Yeah, compared to this guy. Yeah. Now the other thing that plays into this, Jim, at least as far as I can tell, is that remember Spiro T. Agnew had already shuffled off to the Gray Bar Hotel.
Oh yeah.
And so Ford is in place, and you will never convince me that Gerald Ford did not strike a deal with Richard Nixon about what would happen to Richard Nixon if he resigned.
Well, I mean, you know, one hand washes the other.
And in fact, I don't know if anybody else did, but when I heard about when Raj Shah, you know, I played the clip there while I was talking with Steve, when Raj Shah basically confessed that there was a quid pro quo with Anthony Kennedy, you know what I first thought of was Nixon and Ford.
Well, yeah. I mean, deals like this are made all the time. I mean, you take care of me and I'll take care of you. And Kennedy is just as guilty as sin.
Oh, Kennedy's past guilty. Kennedy's dirty.
Absolutely. I mean, his son is in cahoots with Donald Trump financially. Donald will have many billions of dollars. And, you know, it's the whole thing.
You wonder have you bothered to wonder if he ever paid the billion back, or did Deutsche Bank just eat it and the Russians said, don't worry about it?
Who knows? I'm sure they came to some type of, I think the proper term is, accommodation.
Now, in terms, yeah, that good word. In terms of your question, how do we get this guy out of there? He does have good lawyers.
Oh yeah, he has a history of those, starting with Roy Cohn.
Emmett, what's his name? Did a fine job for Clinton. But they're going to give sound legal advice. That's why they get the kind of fees that they get in Washington, D.C. for doing this kind of political work. So that being the case, maybe one of the other things worthy of consideration, Jim, is the notion that you might get a Nixon-Ford deal if Mueller comes out with really damning stuff. It might just be that he can go and play golf for the rest of his days, which is all he ever wanted to do in the first place. He can strike a deal with Pence saying, the minute I'm out of here, I better be fucking pardoned. But even that's a little dicey because that story the other day about Mike Pence's brother saying, yeah, he's intimidated by Trump the way our dad intimidated him. That told me something. Yes, sorry. Emmett Flood. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you, Emmett Flood. The other part of this though is that there are stories coming out that every so often, Trump will dig at Pence because Pence is so eminently dig-attable. Pence will walk in the room and Trump will look at him and go, oh, look, it's the Sunday school teacher's favorite student. Or, I don't know exactly the words. Hey, Mikey, has Jesus talked to you anymore lately?
Yeah.
And he goons on him over his religious mania.
Well, you know, as far as going back to Trump, and him wanting to go and play golf, well, I don't know if I believe that or not. I think he wants to be there for another term. I mean, he's already started.
Well, sure, he has to. He has to. But I think he's getting a little tired of it just by virtue of the he doesn't like the tiny venues. That's why he started talking about them. And the fact that he's, that crazy quote about Elton John.
That was nuts, wasn't it?
Elton has an organ. I don't have an organ. No organ.
Yeah. I mean, you should know what he's going to say next. But, I mean, I don't know. I think he's sort of torn between maybe the power he has in the Oval Office or him saying, well, maybe I need to just go ahead and get back on the golf course. After all, I've done everything I think I need to do. I've been elected president and this, that, and the other.
But we've left one thing out, Jim. The real determinant here is what he is told by his boss. If Pootie wants him in office for 4 more years, Pootie will tell him to suck it up, Buttercup. But if they've gotten as much, if they've wrung as much out of him as they can get, they'll tell him that he can go.
But that is a significant factor in the equation.
But they have not gotten as much out of him as they want because they have not rolled with full force into Ukraine yet. And I'm convinced that that will happen, Jim.
Well, I am too.
Last year, 2 years ago,
we talked about the Crimea. And, you know, that's real essential for Russian security. I mean, the Crimea is their big aircraft carrier right in the middle of the Black Sea. And the Ukraine is their breadbasket. And they want to reestablish as much of the old Soviet Empire, which will quicken their economy. Now, I don't know if they want to take on some of the other little minor republics they had back during the days of communism. I don't know. But I do believe that they want to have the Ukraine back. And even furthermore, I'm thinking about the Baltic states, Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia. I mean, they've never really gotten over having to lose them.
And they could bowl over them in a minute.
Sure, those are just little minor republics compared to the.
I'm intrigued with Helsinki as the location for this performance review, because as a student of history, you'll recall that the Finns kicked the living shit out of the Russians.
Oh yeah, back with the heyday of a German-Russian pact before Hitler invaded Russia, the Nazis were making fun of the Russian army. And we're just giving jibes about, you know, you mean you can't take on little Finland? And like I said, like you said, Stalin was real unhappy with the outcome of that, of the Russo-Finnish War of 1940.
And you know what? The Spanish Civil War hadn't made him any happier either, because it made abundantly clear that German technology was by far superior to Soviet technology in that proxy war.
Well, you know, that was one of the biggest bank robberies that ever happened, because any amount of Soviet aid that Stalin gave to Republicans in Spain, my God, the first thing he did was take their entire gold supply. I mean, he did.
Yeah, sure, it was a heist.
Yeah, I mean, and Stalin was real good at being a bank robber. I mean, that's what he did before he came to power. I mean, he pulled off, I don't know how many bank robbers validated in the party in Georgia and other parts. And, you know, back then they used to call him Koba. And that was sort of his, or so-so. But he sure didn't respond to many of those nicknames after that, except for a few people, and they didn't last too long. Too much longer either. But it's no question in my mind that Putin wants to reestablish hegemony over the Ukraine, the Baltic states, as he has the Crimea. I mean, he already has the rest of that country. I mean, the Russian Republic still covers almost, what, 11 time zones?
Yeah, something insane.
Oh yeah, I mean, but it's like 11 or 15. I don't know, but it's just huge. I mean, he controls the heartland there. The only trouble is that a great deal of that territory that they control in the east is not arable. I mean, it's not the very best real estate. So I'm trying to say.
It's the Gobi goddamn desert. No, it's not. But I know what you mean. I find from a geographical standpoint. I mentioned those areas that Russia had attacked during July 6th, I think it was, even as the American senators were sitting there kissing ass. Well, it's all along the eastern frontier of Ukraine.
Yeah, and that seems to be their next point of activity.
And if you look at it and you think like Putin, well, the fact of the matter is, that's a long way from anybody in the EU or NATO being able to intervene.
Well, that's right.
Because Ukraine is bounded to the northeast by Russia, to the direct north by Belarus, to the south west by Romania and Moldova, and to the southeast again by Russia and the Black Sea, and the only conceivable tangential contact would be Poland, and Poland is in the grips of a right wing uprising of its own now.
Yeah, they are. I mean, let's face it, the Ukraine has always been highly desirable by any number of dictators. I mean, you could go from Hitler all the way to, you know, Stalin. I mean, why do you think Hitler wanted that area for his living space? Because it was just an immense granary, and right to the south.
It's just kind of made to roll tanks across, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, when they went into the Ukraine, any soldier who's ever invaded the Ukraine, be it, or Russia, be it the forces of Napoleon or anybody else, or even, well, I'm not sure how far the Swedes got into it in their war with them, but it's always been like, you know, an unreachable horizon that just they never could obtain. And I guess Uncle Adolf was probably the first one to almost make it. And hell, he'd have made it too if he had if he'd have started a month early.
And by the way, speaking from a perspective of historic irony, if England can get past Croatia tomorrow in the World Cup, it will set up. I mean, the goddess of irony again, Jim. It'll set up a match between England and France in Moscow.
Well, there it is. I mean, location, location, location.
remember, like we were there. Remember Napoleon's retreat from Moscow and
yes,
the horror
sir.
that was?
Yes, sir.
That's you look at the map like I am right now, that's a long damn walk back to France from Moscow.
Sure was. He started out when he invaded, I think, half a million troops. And I think Napoleon finally got back to France with less than 50,000.
Yeah, it was some ridiculous number.
But you know, that's the funny thing. Even when Hitler was planning Barbarossa to invade the Soviet Union, many of his generals had on their bedside reading those memoirs by that French count. I can't remember his name, of the horrors of that. And, you know, no attention was not paid because of the very date of Barbarossa was the same date that Napoleon invaded Russia, to the very same date, June the 22nd. That was when they invaded. And my God, why any fool could not have realized after seeing what happened to Napoleon. Well, he just didn't. I don't know. I think if I'd have been the Germans, I would have waited to June or March of 42 or May of 42 or April. And they could have made it, particularly in the shape that the Russian army was in, after Stalin had just decimated his entire high command. I mean, if you look at the destruction of the Russian army by Stalin, my God, they didn't have anybody left. They had cadets just having graduated from the Russian military academy. And so they were really overwhelmed. And the only thing that saved them was, you know, the winter and also the fact that they had people that they could rely upon to come from Siberia who were used to that kind of fighting. I mean, let's face it, Russia is a very, and I say this because, you know, I'm scared to death of Russia. I mean, I admire the Russian people in my own way. I always have. But when you look at what they have sustained and what's been done to them, and they've always bounced back. They've always overcome it. And anybody who ever went in there with hostile intentions came back with a tail with their tails between their legs.
Well, holding their ass in their hands, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Douglas MacArthur said there are two things you don't do. You don't invade Russia, and you don't invade China.
Never get in a land war in Asia.
No.
He is.
No, not at all. Because I mean,
he was said to have told that to a young John Kennedy, wasn't he?
I believe so. He certainly was. I mean, you're talking about a country that is filled with what we call land sailors. I mean, what the British were able to do on the sea, the Russians were able to do on the dry land. It's just their natural sphere of influence. And I can't see anything that's going to stop them from obtaining their goals. I really don't, particularly with this current administration.
Well, that's why I say that I don't think they're quite done with the orangutan yet.
No, not at all. But, you know, it's it's a question of patience. He wins who waits. And
Pootie is how old is Pootie?
I'd say pretty probably early 60s, 65. He's been around quite a while.
Yeah, okay, yeah, he's 65 years old. So he's still got some time.
Oh, yeah. He's in good health. I mean, you know, he's very robust. Apparently knows how to take care of himself, unlike some of his Soviet predecessors.
Well, Jim, that's because he comes out of the KGB. He wasn't fattened up at the Dasha as an apparatchik or whatever.
No.
He,
you know, his great-grandfather.
Martial arts and all that stuff, and yeah.
And his grandfather, they were house servants and linens, so they've been around a long, long time. And he's had good training. As a young man, in order to be, a lieutenant colonel in the KGB, you know. But even back in those days, when he was a resident Fuhrer in Dresden, he had to go through a lot of obstacles in order to get where he was. And
Yeah, so as a 65-year-old, he can... He feels like he's still got time to wait people out, and
we're no longer dealing with the gerontocracy that led the former Soviet Union. I mean, you look at them. I mean, how long did each of them last in office? Andropov, not long. Chernenko, a year. I mean, Brezhnev before them. Well, he probably lasted as long. But, you know, the last time he made his appearance was when in 82, when he stood atop Lenin's tomb, and he could barely make it, but he was pottering up there like an old bear, and Brezhnev knew that if he couldn't make it, he'd be out. And within, 6 months later, he was dead?
Yep.
But, I mean, we don't have that gerontocracy anymore. And we have a young, vital man who is extremely brilliant in his own way. And I dare say he's marshaled enough resources for his own personal use since 1991. And he's probably, I would say, as far as personal wealth is concerned, I think he is probably wealthier than Queen Elizabeth.
Oh, I wouldn't be at all surprised.
It's
a kleptocracy. You don't get to be a billionaire oligarch in Russia without paying the vig to Putin.
That's fair.
But the more I look at the map, Jim, the more Ukraine begins to prey on my mind, because once upon a time, Turkey was as near to a liberal democracy as the Muslim world had to offer.
Yeah.
And was a close ally of the United States, and with the exception of Greece, of Europe for the most part. Well, now with the rise of Erdogan, it's a strongman state with leanings toward Islamic fundamentalism, and is not nearly the friend and ally that it once was to the United States and Europe. So if you just think in terms of staging areas for anybody to help Ukraine resist Russia, they are severely curtailed.
Well, you just can't get there.
And I would not be surprised to find out that the Russians, they've cozied up to Erdogan, and I would not be at all surprised to find that they were active in encouraging his rise, so that they can feel secure on the southern coast of the Black Sea. So it becomes nearly functionally impossible to do much in the way of coming to Ukraine's aid.
Well, yeah.
And then there's the Nazi problem in Ukraine, and there's that.
True. Yeah, it certainly is. And, of course, you know, going back to the Black Sea, what has Russia always wanted?
Warm water port.
Yep. But ever since the days of Castro or Peter the Great, through Castro, you know, the czars, they've always wanted to get in there and have easy access without being bottled up there in the, you know, in those straits. But these are things that we're not going to solve tonight. But I've enjoyed our conversation, really. And I know you have 10 minutes to go, and I'm sure you have somebody else that's probably on hold.
Well, you're fine. I mean, there's really no such thing as hold anymore. I am hoping to get that that second line in. Maybe I'll try that this week. But as it is, no, we're good. But I will wrap things up. It has been a good conversation, Jim. And looking at, you know, even though it's radio, looking at maps and considering the strategic and tactical aspects of, you know, just where things are taking place, sometimes can bring a little bit of clarity.
Well, I think you need to look at the you need to look at the geographical landmass first. That's one of the first things you examine before you go into the political aspirations of these places, and need to know who is on a good relationship with whom, and you know, and who is not. And then you go to make your third step is exactly what your conclusions are going to be when you deal with these people. But geography has always been the dictator of wars and alliances and the breaking of alliances and, you know, what's going on there.
And it's all fluid now. It's all in play.
It is. Everything is in
play. And who knows, by the time he leaves Helsinki, NATO may be in a million pieces.
Well, he certainly tried to destroy it. I mean, I've never seen any individual attend meetings at NATO to behave the way he did from day one. I mean, he was an absolute buffoon and just a brute going over there. And NATO has been a very good organization and has served us well, particularly in the days of the Cold War.
What, you don't think that they're abusing us and stealing money from us, like he says?
No. I think each country is paying, I'm not sure how they gauge, whether it's their gross national product or whatever economic figures go into that. But I know that they have given us, if it weren't for their real estate, there would be no NATO.
Right.
I think Trump has forgotten that. I mean, he's forgotten it's all on their real estate.
I would offer a gentle correction, Jim. He hasn't forgotten shit. He never knew it to start with.
Well, you're right there. He's the man probably
You, me, and the Horn Family Community Congregation have more native curiosity about how the world works than that man has ever exhibited in the entirety of his miserable, misbegotten, best part of him ran down his mama's leg existence.
That's true. And you know, when he first started Goodigo Dato and started getting over there showing his ass, and I just wanted to tell that son of a bitch, it's not so much a matter of what percentage of their GNP that they pay toward Dato support or whatever or caliber economy is used engaging that, but it is their real estate, and without that, NATO would not exist. And that's exactly what it was done. I mean, if there were, for example, if NATO had to go to war, whose real estate would be the first to become an atomic wasteland? You know?
Yeah, and see, that's
if it were a tactical nuclear situation.
And there's still the good old Fulda Gap.
Yep. The Fulda Gap, and that's exactly where they were supposed to come pouring through all those Soviet tanks and troops and stuff like that. And there was only one solution to stop them, because we could never deploy enough tanks to to take care of that. It had to be tactical nuclear weapons.
Well, and if you just look it up on Wikipedia, it says, the fall to gap was strategically important during the Civil War. Was? Remains.
Oh, yeah. It's been, it's sort of like the it's a certain version of the Khyber Pass. That's exactly the way things are going to roll.
That's a very good analogy. Well, Jim, you have yourself a good evening. It's been a good conversation. You take care of yourself.
I'll do my best.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy Jim calling from not too far from here. 5 minutes before the hour, some notes coming through from Todd. Turkey's leader Erdogan has been very duplicitous in the past few years. Remember, our Constantinople is the gateway to the East? It's a very important place. Well, that's your warm water. That's your warm water part for Mother Russia. Exactly. Mark says, Kennedy's chief of staff and Medal of Honor recipient, General David M. Shoup, to Kennedy concerning Vietnam, no boots on the ground. Southeast Asia. Yep. It's not like nobody was warned. So, by the way, thank you very kindly. We are down, let's see, we're down at 535. Our buddy Hung Like Jesus just took us down to 515. And so there's a little room left on Silent R. Lamar's challenge. We'll see what happens with the overnight crew. Meanwhile, an announcement on the way out. Did you ever find yourself out to eat, only to suddenly have the irresistible urge to start a protest and shame a treasonous Republican fascist out of the establishment? Help is now available with IDWAD. That's AIDWAD, IDWAD. Am I dining with a dickhead? It's a quick and easy reference app to help you detect if there's a treason weasel in your midst. Download it today and use it every time you're out to dinner and want to preserve democracy. Just turn on the app, look for a match, and then start your chant. Available for Android, iPad, iPhone. I am sick to death of Republican fascists and other devices. IDWAD. Am I dining with a dickhead? Thank you, Sparky. That looks right handy. And of course, Chinless Mitch had another crummy meal last night. He got serenaded with by people who object to his miserable fascist tendencies during supper. The Louisville Courier Journal had the story. And one other thing on the way out the door, just in case you weren't thinking that there was anything right or okay about the godforsaken kiddie concentration camps. No. But guess what? Out in Kansas, there's an outfit that is ostensibly a center for housing unaccompanied immigrant children. It's in Topeka. It's called The Villages. It is, of course, a nonprofit. They have a $5.9 million contract with the Department of Health and Human Services to warehouse kidnapped children. Their human resources manager is a guy by the name of Jeffrey J. Montague, 63 years old. Back in 1989, the Boy Scouts of America banned Jeffrey J. Montague from participating in Boy Scouts activities because it was alleged that, well, he'd made sexual overtures on an exchange student at the high school where he worked. That's when the high school decided not to renew his contract. That was 1989. October 2007, Montague was charged with solicitation of sodomy in a public park in Topeka, Kansas. They let him into a diversion agreement a month later in municipal court in Topeka. Meanwhile, the executive director of the Villages, Sylvia Crawford, who's in charge of the concentration camp for kidnapped children, said,
"As is standard procedure for all our employees, Mr. Montague has passed all background checks required by Kansas licensing regulations, as well as all federal requirements."
Yeah, regulations. What regulations? We don't need a stinking regulations. Since February 2017, 190 children have entered the Villages. Among those, 10 of them were separated from their families at the border. Executive Director Crawford wouldn't say anything about how much contact Human Resources Manager Montague has with the kids. A couple of former employees told Think Progress, however, the kids literally have to walk past his office to get to the counselors. He has direct contact with them all the time. Yeah. You know who first raised a hue and cry about him? It was 2014. He was hired as an actor because he's an amateur stage actor. He was hired as an actor to appear in a television campaign ad for gubernatorial candidate Paul Davis, a Democrat. The Kansas Republican Party had a fit. And the Paul Davis campaign pulled the ad and apologized. But now, well, not so much. Yeah. No kidding. The lead case manager at the Villages shelter said,
"I'm not going to go searching for Jeff's background."
Doesn't sound like you got to do much searching. And meanwhile, there's Judette Padilla, who was asked if she knew about Montague's background. She's the one that said, "I'm not going to go searching for his background. And I understand that you have access, and so that's fine. But then that it's a moral dilemma for you versus me, because I'm not concerned, because I know he passed all the background checks he needed to pass to work with kids." Asked if she would allow kids to be left with him, she said, "Well, yes, I would, because I know Jeff. So, I mean, in that aspect of it, I've known his family and him for 30-plus years." Not good for holding back the nightmares, is it? Yes, that's right. That's right, you poor child. We're going to kidnap you from your parents, and we're going to stick you in a concentration camp that we're going to call a shelter, and we're going to let an accused sexual predator have something approaching constant access. And so we're out the door here. Thank you, Libby. Thank you for jumping in. That takes us down to 5:15 to go. Thank you very much indeed. Prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow. Thanks to all of you. I'm sorry about the fundraising. I'm terribly sorry about it. It's the only way we keep things going, that's all I can say. Thank you, Libby, thank you. So we'll be back tomorrow night. Thank you to all of you who keep this program on the air. Thank you so much. And thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaged in this little conversation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Steve and Sparky in the chat room this evening. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you, John Fox, head on in Australia. Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.